Hey everyone, we're back with Sterling Daw to talk about starting and developing an RV park and some success strategies to grow your business. I'm Alex Burkett and this is the Outdoor Alliances Podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Sterling Daw from Wolf Hill Investments, which acquires, manages, and sells destination-style RV parks and campgrounds. Sterling is also a capital advisor for Fervent Capital, which specializes in capital advisory for owners and operators in the outdoor hospitality space. Sterling, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Can you just start again with just a brief introduction of who you are beyond what I talked about and what all you do?
Sure. And thanks again for having me. This was a lot of fun the last time, and I'm excited to keep the conversation going. Just like you said, my name is Sterling Dodd. I am a capital advisor for Fervent Capital. We go out into the market and try to bring value to RV park owners, campground owners, guys who have been traditionally ignored by institutional lending groups. We try to bring a lot of value by bringing sophisticated finance products to this industry. On the Wolf Hill investment side, it's my love and passion. I take an active role in the deal sourcing. I go out into the market and I look for RV parks that are for sale, that are maybe not for sale, but are looking for a slow divestment process. We reposition. We provide a lot of value. We provide a lot of sophisticated business, acumen to the day-to-day operations of RV parks and campgrounds. And we do this on behalf of an investor pool. We operate like a traditional investment platform. So Wolf Hill and Fervent Capital operate co-located with one another. They provide value to one another, and in turn try to provide value to the rest of the market. Did that answer your question?
It did. So when you're going out and you're sort of sourcing these deals and you're looking at things, what are sort of some of these things that are most important in your mind? Would it be like the land that the park's sitting on, the location? Is it the sites, the amenities, or sort of a combination of all of it?
That's a great question. So the easy answer is going to be a combination of all of it. And so I'll go back to, I'll kind of revert to business operations kind of 101. So it's going to be a lot of things that we look at when it comes to analyzing and seeing a great opportunity. So that could be, obviously, location is so important. You know, are we orbital to something that is beautiful? Are we orbital to places of majesty? Our RV is going to go there. Then you talk about what's the value proposition, how is that being maximized or under maximized? What does the ownership look like? Is it someone that has historically, been really attuned to what their customers need? Is this a key man situation where a lot of the people come back because of that individual? It has a lot to do with, the subtle art of business acquisition is understanding both the hard skills and the soft skills. You're looking at the financials are just one piece of this. Obviously, that's kind of the circulatory system of the business. It's the blood of the business. Does it stand on its own economics? Then you look at everything that orbits around that and the strength of its relationships with the community, its strength with its suppliers. If they have retail, exposure, do they have, what kind of actual structure of the business do they have? Are they operating under a traditional RV rental model? Do they go in and say, hey, we have pads for rent. You can rent them for daily, weeklies, nightlies, or are they a kind of a timeshare structure? So it's looking at all of those details and saying, is this a good fit for us? And can we change it? How hard would it be to lift it? Would it be just easier just to start from scratch and build next door, which we don't want to do, but those are all really big questions. And, that's just kind of scratching the surface, but an analysis of the park is a complete and holistic exercise. And it really does go to, your due diligence checklist, internally, looking at all those details.
And if somebody, or when you guys are looking at this, if you're looking to sort of develop an RV park from scratch, or pretty, the operations haven't been in existence for very long, mm-hmm. what does that process look like? And does that change anything in that evaluation process for you?
Absolutely. So let's dive into the development process. Let's even back up further and say, should we develop here? Is this a place that can absorb that capacity? You know, I'll use another commercial real estate asset class as an example. If a grocery store chain goes and says, we want to build a grocery store in this area. Well, what are the key things that they're looking for? Well, they're probably looking for rooftops. They're probably looking for what is the average household income. You know, what are people, what kind of disposable income does each household have? You know, what is the total dollar amount that is being allocated towards, you know, food budgets? How many children are in the household? Because children consume more food generally. So we do a similar exercise in the development process. It's, again, are we near a place of majesty? Are RVers specifically, not just vacationers, not just individuals who are just kind of passing through, because of the nature of our business, because of the nature of outdoor hospitality, we have to look at what actual RVers do. What does this client want? And that is a very specific question. And, you know, it says, if we build it, will they come? So, you know, are people going to come here? So, that's the should we build it. And can we build it? That's simple. That's not hyperbolically simple, but it is aggregating resources and then focusing your forces to create something, which is, you know, what we do. So the should question is a little bit bigger to me, but the development process is incredible. There's so many details that one must think about once you've cleared that first hurdle of should. So that's, again, it's a part of the development due diligence process. And we can dive into the how if you want to, but the should question should be what any potential developer or someone with some land is looking at doing. You know, if somebody out there says, well, I've got 45 acres that I just don't know what to do with. That's a question, you know, and they think maybe I should make it into an RV park. Well, do people want to go there? Is there a reason why people are going to stop in that area? So it takes a little bit of nuance to get to it.
Yeah. So let's dive into that development process a little bit. If somebody in your opinion or other people's opinion decides that, hey, this is a plot of land or a piece of attractive real estate that could be developed, what does that development process look like, at least for you guys and what you do?
Yeah, that's a long and lengthy answer,
depends on the place, but it does.
Yeah.
Just touch on that a little bit of what the basic process looks like.
Sure. So, you know, what's going to happen is, from a sophisticated standpoint, you're going to want to take a look at the dirt. You know, we've made those hurdles. Let's say we think RVers are going to come here. There's a good reason why RVs and RV owners are going to come to this location. It's, you know, geographically anchored to something that's, you know, beautiful and majestic. So let's go through the hard technical details. You're going to want to build a simple revenue forecast model. You know, what are we going to build? How much is it going to be on a unit economic basis? How much are our costs going to be? How are we going to offer? How are we going to price the value proposition into the market? You know, what are the comparables in the area? So doing that due diligence, and that is a modeling exercise. Then you move on to, once that's been hurdled, obviously you're taking the time to understand the costs therein, you know, how much it's going to cost to build horizontal utilities, which include your sewer lines, your your pedestals. We're talking about electricity, entitlements, permitting. There is an extensive list. That's an extensive checklist that goes into, you know, where people are going to plug their RVs in. And, you know, the full hookup suite that we talk about is that checklist, which is your sewer, your electricity, your data, which, you know, internet is now a utility. It is very much a part of that conversation. We can probably take an entire podcast to talk about that and how that's changed over the last 3 to 5 years. But then you also have your water. So essentially the four things that make life enjoyable and sustainable for RVers. And how do you build those things? How do you put them into raw earth? How do you make it so that, you know, 26,000 pound truck and RV combo can back into it nice and easy and not have to, you know, do a 100 point turn to get into your pad? So it's a series of value propositions over and over and over again that gets you to answering those questions for the RVer. So, you know, you do, you know, kind of digressing back, once you've figured out how you're going to drop in your utilities, you're going to be entitled, one must also engage the municipalities. One must also engage governing bodies. You must talk to, you know, the regional government. And for anyone out there that understands building relationships, you have to be amicable. You have to be able to provide value to them. How are you going to provide value to the government, to the community? The government represents the people of this group of people in this area. How are you going to provide value? Are you going to provide tax revenue? Or are you going to say, well, we're bringing in folks for jobs? You know, there's a cereal plant right up the road. You know, there's folks that want to come in here and make it easier for you to flex up and down. That's going to bring value to everybody. It's going to float all boats. So you need to think about it just as you would any other business transaction when you're approaching municipalities, is how do I bring value? So then, you know, once you've engaged municipalities, you look at a marketing plan, you know, what does that look like? And then it really gets into the nitty gritty of engaging general contractors, building a construction schedule. The really important part of this, you know, that a lot of folks forget, a lot of the soft costs and that go into the sunk costs are engaging engineers. Like, to do all of this, you have to have individuals who can just draw it out for you. And I know we could all likely sit down with a pen and paper and some crayons and make something very nice. And we could probably get it done that way. And a lot of folks in the past have, a lot of RV parks have been built that way historically, but that's not the way it works anymore. So you have to go out there. You have to engage a reputable engineering firm to do the analysis on the land, what the tension looks like, where water is going to run. You know, is there flooding in the area? There's just a series of questions that have to be answered before you can take a development to market. And what does taking it to market look like? Well, that means now that you've done all of those things, now we're going to take it and somebody's going to pay for it. Either you're going to pay for it or you're going to go raise debt and equity to go do it. So that's kind of where Fervent Capital comes in, you know, to help you to do that. But that's a whole new set of hurdles that you have to get through. But as you can see, there's a pretty lengthy list for developing something.
Outside of developing the sites themselves, which you just mm-hmm. talked about, is there things on your list like amenities, like whether it's a lake or a pool or all these different things that have sort of become not more of a standard, but more things that people are looking for? Do you have sort of a set of things or a group of things that you consider when you're developing one of these properties?
Absolutely. You know, understanding RVers is really where the amenity offering comes from. And I'll pull from other commercial real estate asset classes and say, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, developers came into the room and said, amenities are everything, even after location or even before location. You know, it said, do you have retail located on the bottom of floor? Do you have a gym? Do you have, lock boxes for Amazon? Is everything clean? Do you have trash concierge? All these really little tiny intrinsic details that are at one point were setting apartment complexes apart have now become like the standard. And now in RV parks, and RV communities, those things, it's kind of seeing the same transformative process. And those amenities differ on the different subclasses of RV parks. So for RV parks, when we talk about a roadside community or a roadside location on the facility, you're looking at a group of people that are coming in, they're staying for 24, 48, potentially, a week long at a location, and they're booming across the country. They're booming from one destination to another. Their amenities aren't necessarily going to be very high. They're just going to want clean restrooms, a nice place to do some laundry, potentially somewhere nice to eat located, within the immediate 10 miles. It's got to be safe, easy to get in and out quickly. That's a big one. That's a completely different. It's very, very important that we remember how easy it must be. That's why we charge more for pull-throughs and charge less for back-ends. So it makes the settling in, the pulling out that much easier. So that amenity offering is going to be different than it is for, let's say, a resort-style RV park, a Jellystone, a Margaritaville. Those guys are out there and they are creating, their competition is Six Flags. Their competition is SeaWorld. They're offering, they have water slides and they have man-made water features. They have lazy rivers, massive retail operations. Those are amenities in and of themselves, and you're catering to that specific type of demographic. They're coming there, they've taken time off. The individuals who have come there have taken time off out of their work schedule. They're likely not full timers to go out to this location, stay there for between 5.5 to 10 days, and enjoy themselves on a holiday weekend, and do things, let their kids run around, buy ice cream, have little bracelets that spend money and then recharge automatically. We've all seen it. It's a safe place to be. Parents like it because, again, safety. It's big pads. They can roll in their 40-foot fifth wheel. It's easy to get into, easy to get out of. You can let your kids run around. They get to meet their friends. They get to play outside. They get sunshine. They're not stuck on their Xboxes. They can go and play at the arcade. I mean, it's a resort, and it's great for the family. And that, again, that's going to be a completely different amenity offering. And when it comes to thinking about that, you have to do a boutique exercise and say, if I'm building in, the Smoky Mountains of Kentucky, what is that amenity offering going to look like? Am I going to offer horse stalls? Are people going to want to come out here and do things that people with horses like to do? It's just a matter of understanding who's going to be traveling out there. And that's what makes it so much fun, because no RV park, no RV park amenity, no RV community, no RV resort is ever exactly the same. Even if you're with a big brand, like you're the incredible organizations that are KOA and Jellystone and, the Sun Communities, these are machines, and they have a pretty strict adherence to their amenity offering, but they also recognize that each park is different. Each geography is different, and they must cater accordingly. That makes sense?
That does. We'll transition a little bit, stay on similar topic, and just okay. Talk about what's your outlook on some of these development projects, and where do you see RV park growth going into the future?
Well, I'll start by saying that keeping a pulse on the macro and the micro concurrently is extremely important. Watching the trends as they evolve in this industry is very, very important. And again, just like we talked about the last time, the great accelerant, which is COVID-19, as we go into the world that is a lot of professional knowledge-based jobs that don't require you to be in the office. You know, I see it every single day on LinkedIn. I see it every single day on news channels. Companies, major employers, are abandoning the idea of nailing down a day when everyone comes back to the office. This is a key performance indicator for the market and for our industry. A percentage of those people will abandon and relinquish the tethering of a mortgage, and they will go into RVing, or they'll keep their home, and they'll buy an RV, and they'll go travel a portion of the year, and they get to work and live and enjoy their surroundings in a mobile home and office. The American market, the labor market, and the way that we experience that work-life balance is changing, and we're seeing it happen faster and faster and faster as we get new variants and deltas and omicrons and et cetera. And what we're realizing is that people are now happier not having to be in the office. Obviously, there is we probably have an entire podcast on this subject in and of itself, but there's such a prolific amount of people that just don't need to go back to the office. And companies are realizing that it's cheaper. It is the economics hurdle for them not to air condition those folks, not to have to require them to come in, waste time in traffic, waste time getting ready in the morning, waste time having unnecessary small talk at the water cooler. It doesn't need to happen anymore. And we can be so much more effective with this 4-hour work week, this 4-day work week that's the UK is attempting to create now. Staying forward and ahead of those trends has been Wolf Hill's initiative here, is catering to those people and, knowing what they need and what they want and being able to say, hey, our locations are going to help you achieve a work-life balance, but also enjoy where you're at because it's beautiful. So to answer your question, I have to back up into where are people going? What are the macroeconomic effects that are driving the changes in this market, and how is it growing? And that's reflective in RV sales. That's reflective in RV parts and service needs. More people are putting these units onto the road, so those parts companies are having to deploy out more equipment, more repairs. RV technicians are on a huge rise because, again, you put more rubber to road, you're going to need more repairs. Okay, you put more roofs under sunlight, you're going to need more TLC. And that, to me, signals more people are getting on the road. They're working from it. They're enjoying that lifestyle. Communities are rolling around on the road together. They're homeschooling their kids. It is a function of the changing demographic. And obviously, they're not everyone in the country is doing this. There's plenty of folks buying homes. There's plenty of folks doing the traditional mortgage thing. I have a mortgage. There's lots of that. It is an exercise to look at the amount of people that really love this. Either they're doing it full time, or they're doing part time, or they're doing it, for a vacation basis. But every single time we hear the earnings calls from the majors coming out and saying that it's even more and more sales, or they're cresting more and more record sales volume. We can't make these things fast enough. That's just one indicator, and those units need a place to go. That's pure and simple. So that's what we're doing. And we're tracking those things. It's not just a hunch. We're putting a finger in the air, and the wind and the data is pushing us towards creating these things for these people.
And so if there's people out there who see some of this growth that you just described and find this to be attractive, mm-hmm. but let's say they don't want to be an operator, what's the process look like for them to still maybe invest into these ideas and invest in this concept, but do it more with their money rather than with their time?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would just say, give us a call. That's really, you know, what we do on a day-to-day basis. You know, we have a pool of investors that say, look, you know, we see the rising tides. We want to deploy a little bit more capital towards this. And, you know, it's been a function of our expertise to go out and, you know, show you the data and the metrics and the yields that are, you know, are capable in this space. You know, it's our job as capital advisors to go out and raise the debt and to bridge the gap, so that we can create a levered internal rate of return that is healthy for investors and make sure that banks are comfortable with it. So, you know, making them happy with, you know, where this industry is, where it's going, how it's maturing, that's what we do every single day. So if, you know, selfishly, the plug here is that if you're an investor and you have undeployed capital and, or maybe no matter what your size, give us a call. Yeah. I would say that is the best way, to invest in this space.
And so if somebody does want to find out more information or contact you about this, where can they go? Can they shoot you an email, visit your website? Absolutely. What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah. They can reach me at my phone number. I'm sure we can tag that somewhere. You can send me an email. We'll get that done. You can reach out to our website, which is wolfhillinv.com. You can reach me on LinkedIn. Sterling Dodd is my handle. You know, you're going to see Wolf Hill Investments on LinkedIn. There's a multitude of ways to get a hold of us, and we have staff that can absolutely, you know, make that happen for you.
All righty. Thanks for listening to the Outdoor Alliances podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's segment with Sterling. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and join me again for more news, exciting updates, and great conversations.